time to put away the bias, the lies, and deceit, and bring forth real talk from real people about real news. Providing the out loud truth and capturing the essence of a new generation, all in a fast-paced hour. This is Viewpoint This Sunday.
Welcome to another Viewpoint This Sunday. This is Malcolm Out Loud. Well, the big story this week, friends, is Iran, the Middle East, Iran provoking the West. And this seems to be escalating. We've seen this before, but of course, President Trump comes out and he says he's ready and willing to sit down and meet with Iran, but he's not in a hurry. We'll see what that means if he's not in a hurry there, huh? And then what do you think about George Soros? You hear that name a lot. And I call this the George Soros mania. There are a couple of interesting elections, district attorney elections, and he is kind of factoring into a lot of these local elections around the nation. Nobody's really talking about this much, and it is a fascinating story with Soros and his influence. As you look into him more, and many of you follow him out there or understand who this guy is, very interesting. We'll have a power panel discussion on that one. And our superpower status, where is the United States of America at this time in all of these world affairs, these global affairs that are happening right now? Let's get to the top of the show here, friends, and welcome on, please, Ilana Friedman. Ilana is a veteran intelligence analyst specializing in terrorism and politics. She's an advisor to law enforcement global corporations, a weekly columnist, and a show host here at America Out Loud. Please welcome Baruch Plettner. Baruch is an entrepreneur, a scientist, an inventor. He's passionate about education and the war on globalism. He's the editor-in-chief of Zionism.com. It's wonderful to have both Ilana and Baruch on the program here together for the first time. That's right. There are two tankers out there. One is Norwegian and one was Japanese. And this was sort of at the entrance to the Hormuz Straits, and they were struck. This is a very key strait and waterway to the world here. It carries a lot of energy through this part of the world here. It's always been a tricky, tricky conversation navigating these seas here. What's interesting about this is while this was going on, the Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe was meeting with the Iranian leadership, which I find very odd. And so as they're meeting with a foreign leader, then they're kind of damaging one of his tankers. Ilana, I just find that a real odd juxtaposition where you don't typically have a foreign leader in and then, you know, take one of their national ships down or tend to damage it. It's quite an insult, actually. And worse off on this, the Japanese, the owner of that cargo ship came out and said, they don't think it was what it was. They think some sort of a flying object or something. Maybe that's the UFO story we've been hearing about, huh? Ilana, what do you think?
Well, it's an interesting story. One of the ships was clearly attacked with these limpet bombs that are attached to the hull of the ship, and they're like the limpet animals, the sea animals that attach themselves to hard surfaces. But these are bombs, and they are magnetic or something that's going to attach to the hull of a ship, and then they can be detonated in one of two ways. They can either be exploded on a timer, or alternatively, they can explode after the ship has gone a certain period of time. And we don't really know what these were, but we do know that one of them did not explode, and it was removed by the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps, their navy. So there is an awful lot of evidence pointing to the fact that Iran was closely involved. What they were doing, why Iran targeted Japanese ships is beyond me. He was in the middle of some kind of discussion with Shinzo Abe, and there's no indication that there was any animus there, but both ships had Japan-connected cargo. So this is a puzzle, and I think it talks to the seriousness of what is going on there.
Ilana, do you think that this could be some rogue elements in within the Revolutionary Guards that actually wanted to kind of scuttle the talks that Abe was having with the top leadership?
Well, when you think of who the IRGC is and who what their role is, it is to protect the Ayatollah. So, and they report directly to him. So if there is a rogue element in the IRGC, that's a very serious development.
Well, that brings up an interesting point, Baruch. Wow. Because I've been trying to figure out that you say something very interesting there. So can you answer that question? Is that possible, you think?
Well, you know, I guess in America, in Europe also, people always tend to kind of play that game. Maybe there are some elements within the Iranian regime who are more, you know, moderate, quote unquote, and hardliners and moderates and play that game. But to me, the real question is, you know, are they all on the same page in their high, you know, in their hardline approach? Mm-hmm. Perhaps not. Perhaps it's not hard lines against moderates, but rather some sort of, you know, power struggle within that regime. And power struggles always exist, even in America. So to me, that's a possibility.
I think you both agree with me that it is very odd that they're meeting with the Japanese prime minister and they go after one of their national ships. Makes no sense at all. There obviously is a disconnect there. I thought that would be an interesting place to start. And I don't really know why that is, and nor do any of us here, but very interesting. And also the fact that the owner of the ship, the Japanese ownership, they come out and say some odd things about it too, certainly denying the facts, I also find a little odd. It's almost like a mystery here now with what's happened surrounding this. Going on further with that, Baruch, the head of the Arab League on Friday warned Iran against escalation. Let me read this to you here quick. And I quote, they say, "My call to my Iranian," and I call them Iranian brothers, "be careful and reverse course because you're pushing everybody towards a confrontation that no one would be safe if it happens." So my question is the United States headed to a confrontation there in the Middle East again, Baruch?
Well, I mean, I think that Trump really, really wants to avoid it because America is so internally divided right now that this is not a good time. There needs to be a lot more work done in restoring America's might, not when it comes to the hardware, but when it comes to human hearts. So I think Trump would much rather avoid it, but it takes two to make peace, but it takes only one to start the fight. And I think that Iran is quite ready for a fight, and they seem to think that America is at a place of weakness. And I think that they will keep doing these dirty tricks, these wars by proxy, these murky waters kind of tricks, and keep escalating them until some kind of response is forthcoming. So unfortunately, I think the chances of confrontation are constantly growing.
The other interesting point you bring up is the fact that, and I say this all the time on this network, is the world can see how disconnected we are. And you just said it very eloquently, that they see that disconnection, Baruch. They see what's happening here at home. They see we're not united, clearly, and that there's a big power struggle here in America as well. And that's what plays on the world stage here. And that that absolutely factors into a lot of these things. And in fact, Baruch, wouldn't you say that's even, we'll talk a little bit after here about the Chinese and their influence, but I think you would agree with me to say that that also influences in a big way what the Chinese do, correct?
Well, I mean, absolutely. I mean, just think about it for a second. You know, if you just come from outer space and you see a country in which one of two major party, a party that holds the majority in one of the branches of government, is calling for the imprisonment of the head of the executive branch. And I'm not talking on the margins. I'm talking about the main, that's their main, you know, Pelosi, the speaker, third in line for the presidency. She wants to imprison the actual sitting president. If you see that coming from, you know, outer space, you can never imagine that this is a country that's destined to win any wars or even to last for much longer. You think it's a country on the verge of collapse. I'm not saying that America is on the verge of collapse, but you can interpret it that way if you come you know, from a different place, right?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for that honesty. I couldn't agree with you more because you're exactly right here. Ilana, let's that same question I find interesting with the and you know again the, with the head of the Arab League coming out and saying, okay, be careful and reverse course because you're pushing everyone towards a confrontation. We know that that is the definition of the Middle East, really, I hate to say, but a confrontation. What's your view on that? Are we headed to a confrontation there?
Well, I think Iran would like to see that, and I agree with Baruch that this is exactly what's going on. Iran is a provocateur in this whole scenario, and they do see America as being weak because they don't understand our system, and they certainly don't understand Trump. And from Trump's point of view, this is a situation that has got to be de-escalated. But from Iran's point of view, they're perfectly happy to escalate it. And we can see what's happening all around the Strait of Hormuz, which is the choke point for a lot of the oil is sent through the Strait of Hormuz and represents some 30% or more of all of the seaborne oil in the world. And if that were choked off, which Iran has threatened to do more than once, if that were choked off, then we would have a very serious energy crisis throughout the world. And that is something that America certainly does not want to see. And Iran doesn't really care.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I started thinking here about what Iran wants out of this. I want to come back to that in a moment here. Their ultimate goal with the strike, because that's an interesting conversation I want to have with you a little bit after here about our superpower status and Iran and China and the factors here. I want to stay on this particular strike about the drones. Very interesting other piece of this now is the Iranian forces in the Gulf of Oman there. They fired a missile at a U.S. drone this was like hours before the attack there. The drone was spotted by the Iranian boats, and they obviously realized that we're watching everything out there. This is one of the most watched and heavily trafficked areas in the world. I mean, nothing happens out there, and we, without us not knowing, we know what's going on out there. So they fired off a surface-to-air missile and launched at the drones and missed the target, fell into the sea. Does that tell us anything more, Ilana, in regards to shooting down these drones, do you think? Because there were a couple of them that were impacted here.
Yes, and in fact, if you can picture the water surface, there's a lot of activity. Large boats, large ships, small boats, some of these fast boats that are the Iranian National Guard has a base that was 24 miles off these target ships, mm-hmm. And so they're right in the middle of it. Their little boats are all over the place. So you see a crowded waterway. As you say, it's one of the most heavily traveled in the world. And the idea that the Iranian Guard, the IRGC, shot down this this drone was an indication that they did not want to be observed. Mm-hmm. And there is a speculation that when they put these limpet mines on the ships, mm-hmm. that they created some sort of a distraction on the other side of the ship so that they would not be noticed, because these limpet mines were apparently applied in daylight. We don't know for sure. The video looks like it was done in dark, but it's hard to tell because sunrise is so early these days, and we don't know what mechanism was that detonated the mines.
You know, another aspect of this is people don't often think about it, but it used to be my specialty, which was acoustics. There is as much, if not more, traffic underwater in those straits that there is on the surface of the water. Oh. I mean, can you imagine that Israel doesn't have one of its or a couple of its submarines there? Can you imagine that America doesn't? And then there is the issue of hydrophones. There are vast arrays of underwater listening devices called hydrophones, and there is extremely sophisticated technology now that analyzes those sound signatures, and sound travels very well underwater, to identify exactly what's going on. You can separate a tanker from a container ship, from a battleship, certainly from a torpedo, from anything else. So I think there's a good picture of what the intelligence services know what took place there, but everybody's fighting this intelligence war of mm-hmm. information and mostly disinformation about that. So that's another item there.
Yeah, Baruch, that's good because you now give a good visual to folks about, again, this congested waterway, that it's not just what we see in the videos and the pictures. What Baruch is pointing out is very fascinating. It's everything that is below the water. And as you mentioned, we haven't even talked about Israel in this and the fact that they certainly know what's going on here because you've got the stakes are really high here, which we'll continue to talk about here. Let's stay on, Baruch, what you're talking about now. I want to touch on something here about the propaganda machine here. Well, Iran's MO with anything like this is to deny. I mean, they never admit anything. They deny no matter what you have. And the video has the shows the, you know, the U.S. military released that video, and it shows the Iran's Revolutionary Guard removing the unexploded limpet mine from the oil tanker. And that's been highly, highly circulated here. President Trump comes on television. He says on one of the news programs, he says, you know, they did it because you saw the boat. He said, I guess one of the mines didn't explode, and it's probably got essentially Iran written all over it. Now, again, Zarif, the foreign minister, comes out. He fires back, and he says, the U.S., Israel, and Saudi Arabia have a plot to sabotage diplomacy. That Zarif was accusing this, you know. What do you think of this, Baruch, with this propaganda machine that is in, you know, I just look at some of the statements here that Iran even gave to the United Nations. He said the U.S. economic war on terrorism against the Iranian people. And I think that's what the crux of this is, actually. We haven't talked about yet is the sanctions are having mm-hmm. a dire, dire effect there in Iran. And, mm-hmm. and my guess is they're striking out right now. What do you say to that, sir?
Well, I mean, you know, his propaganda war is exceedingly successful, because if you look at America, you have, let's say, roughly half the people who hate Trump and are fully willing to believe that he would, you know, do a false flag operation or something like that to mm-hmm. wag the dog and, you know, and instigate a war just to save his own behind from whatever they imagine that trouble that he's in. But there is more. I mean, as they say on TV, you know, wait, there is more, because half of Trump supporters believe the same story. Within the Trump support, you know, within the, those who support Trump, there is a very strong element of isolationists, of, you know, conspiracy theorists who believe in that kind of stuff. And so Zarif is being very, very effective in his propaganda warfare. And I would just add quickly one more thing. He's holding on to the Norwegian crew of that or at least a crew, not necessarily Norwegian, of that Norwegian tanker, mm-hmm. and also some Russians. So that were so the question is why? You know, why is he holding on to them? One possible answer is that they have something to say and he doesn't want them to say it.
So
they're holding on to them for at least for now mm-hmm. to stop them from wagging their tongues and mm-hmm. spilling the beans, right? But yeah. I think the Reefs propaganda operation is mm-hmm. is unfortunately for us a very, very successful
one. Yeah, very well said. Yeah, you know, when you think about it, and you hear some of the analysis we're talking about right now, people, you know, in a very much interesting way, you really have some elements in play here that could start a significant war. You think about the factions involved with China and Russia and Iran, what's happening with all of these players here. And, you know, you really have some elements here, as Baruch was just putting out there as well. You know, that this is the kind of thing that sparks a world war, quite frankly. You've got sides lining up with other sides. I just plant that seed there a moment here. Because you see some of these factors in, as he was just talking about, the propaganda machine and in the United States here. But then Iran also and China, where do they fit into this? China, I think, is really not so much the sleeping giant anymore, is it now? Huh? And they came out and said some very interesting things as well about all this. And guess who they support? You guessed it. They support Iran. So that's China's, and then at the same time, we've got this massive trade war and all that going on with China. So that leaves a very interesting pause, I think. I want to ask both Baruch and Ilana to come back, and I want to talk about, he'll be back a little bit later in the program, friends, and talk about our superpower status, what the stakes are, and what happens next.
We are the vision of the voices. You can email us at talk@americaoutloud.com.
Out Loud perspective awaits you in life, love, politics, a healthy lifestyle, your faith, personal development, and living an out loud life on AmericaOutLoud.com. Blitzer News and Entertainment Network, where you can listen 24/7 on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
It's always a lot happening here that we sometimes don't pay attention to people. And then, you know, when I say the name George Soros, what comes to your mind, right? Well, I call this George Soros mania. It's interesting how this one man can dominate the thoughts and minds of people and the conversations, and his influence is absolutely incredible here. Interesting points I want to bring up about Soros today and tell you, who is George Soros? Who is this man, and what is he up to? Well, George Soros is a billionaire for sure, and his influence in local elections is pretty aggressive. This past week, he picked up two victories in Virginia, and he wasn't even on the ballot, but his money was. A gentleman, a campaign consultant by the name of Ben Trippett, he says, "We were outspent 3-1. This is an election that was bought, not won." Now, these were the primaries. These were the Democratic primaries. And there were two prosecutor candidates he backed. You have Democrats in there, but he wanted more far left thinking people in those races, in those district attorney seats. So he poured nearly $1 million into those campaigns. That's some pretty big money for local DA races, I have to tell you. Well, that money gave Parisa Tappy and Steve Descano a significant financial advantage here over the incumbents. And here's another thing, people. They had no experience at all. I mean, the Washington Post reported that while the two challengers have never prosecuted a case in a state court, they beat these two incumbents that had more than 60 years of experience between them. Now, that should give you pause. And that exactly is the influence of George Soros, if that tells you anything. So what Soros is doing, he's trying to reform the criminal justice system by backing these district attorneys and prosecutors. And he has funded these cases in states all over the nation. Now, let me give you an example here, please. How about states like California, Florida, Illinois, Mississippi, Louisiana, Pennsylvania, Texas, New Mexico? You get the picture? Yeah. And this is far outside of Virginia, obviously. And here's the other thing. His preferred candidates of choice have mostly all won their races. Well, now you should be asking yourself, who the hell is this guy, and what's his program? What's his plan? What's he up to? I'd like you to welcome on here our panel, please. Arnetta Notkin is here, 30 years working on Wall Street. Arnetta is a producer and commentator here at America Out Loud. Karen Schoen joins us. She's an educator, dean, a retired teacher, and activist focused on saving America. Susan Price is an investigative researcher, a patriot, a veteran advocate, and Gold Star mother. Karen, Susan, Arnetta, thank you all for being here. And so we're talking George Soros. So with these two victories in Virginia, and with the fact that they were outspent, and the fact of what he's doing to district attorneys and prosecutors, what's George Soros up to, Arnetta?
Well, George Soros, everyone calls a philanthropist. And to me, he sees himself as someone who rules the world. His philanthropy goes to destruction instead of for the good of humanity. He is the silent enemy of justice and the justice system right now. He starts at the bottom and elects, finances, and empowers people who aren't very good at their job. The two district attorneys in Virginia had never prosecuted the cases, but they still get elected. He does a casting call for these people who become puppets of the progressive left, and he gets them elected. He understands long-term strategic planning. Starts at the bottom, and it's the domino effect, only it goes up. as these people who are the puppets move upwards, they keep getting higher in office and higher in office until they end up as Secretary of States or Attorney Generals of States. And the state's election process becomes controlled by the progressives, and the states turn blue. That's plain and simple what Soros is about. He wants this country to become a third world country, and he wants to control it.
Karen Schoen, George Soros, with these races, these specifically now the local races, the district attorney races, the victories in Virginia, the amount of states he's impacting, and then what Arnetta puts out there about Soros and what he's up to, which is actually a very clever game that you start with those small pieces with the domino effect, and then you're able to really put together bigger change. And a lot of times you can do this and catch people that are unsuspecting of what you're up to. Is that a good analogy of George Soros and what he's doing?
Oh, I would say that that's right on. It's spot on. That's exactly what he is. He is, to me, the classic example of a nihilist, because he has a God complex, and he has said on multiple occasions, when asked about the destruction of what he has accomplished, he believes that he's God and it's his right to make these changes in our society. He's a communist. He also believes that if he gets the right people in public office in law, as he just did, as prosecutors, then they will go lenient on criminals, which we can see that happening. And, you know, criminals will then be able to vote, which is what his goal is. There's a piece in, if anybody, you go online and just type in the 45 goals of communism read into the congressional record. Mm-hmm. And if you look at those 45 goals, you can see exactly what he's doing, because he's following each one of them. They believe in a soft coup, so to speak, whereby the takeover is more cultural than fighting. And he believed that after the destruction of England, and that's how he made his money, he destroyed the English market and bet against England, and of course England lost and he became a billionaire. But he also participated in making that happen. He has about 200 NGOs, non-government agencies and nonprofits that he funnels money to. Mm-hmm. And on any different occasion, these people are armed and ready to go out. And I don't mean armed with guns, armed with their mouths, with a riot in mind, whatever the media has called for. They will go out and make sure that their voices are heard, known. The sad part is that most people never ask what part of the population does this affect. And effectually what we are doing, because of our tolerance ideology, is we are allowing this to happen without taking up the issue of why it's happening.
Susan, let's bring you into the conversation here. We're starting to get a feel of who Soros is, what his background is, what he's up to. He pumped nearly $1.5 million into the Philadelphia Justice and Public Safety. It was a PAC that he had there. And he supported a candidate. His name was Larry Krasner in the Democratic primary for Pennsylvania District Attorney election. Now, Krasner won by a wide margin. Now, here's why I bring this up and why it's very interesting, is that crime in Philadelphia is sky high. In fact, it's actually, surprisingly to a lot of people, it's actually the number one dangerous big city in America. And Philadelphia, Philly, is very close to ending criminalization of all drug possession. That's another interesting point that Krasner has been pushing. 1 year in, Krasner sees himself, it's been stated, as leading his own movement against mass incarceration. He's trying to do away with it entirely. So they're going from 6,500 people in county jail to 4,700. So he's putting a lot of them out on the streets. He believes that's good. And that's his thing. He's also gone after police and law enforcement and wants to stop. He's making it illegal for the stop and frisk and all of that business. So he's on a crusade, this Larry Krasner, the DA out of Philadelphia. What do you think of that and Soros's impact there?
Well, it is Soros's influence, because Soros owns a few, well, more than a few prisons. And so he works in the background at every step that he can. He's just to free criminals, to have criminals run the streets and have a lawlessness. And Soros is always tied in with the Black Lives Matter, anything to do with debilitating a rule of law. And I wanted to mention that it is alleged that Soros is also the leader in the Vatican's Ninth Circle cult. So any way he can influence these people that have an obtuse outlook on law and keeping our cities and communities safe, Soros's money has backed people like Larry Krasner and others, because that's what he does. He, you know, with the Open Society Foundation, Soros has pumped in $32 billion.
He seems to be anti-law, anti-everything, and his candidates are out there, these DAs. Is that part of his game plan, yeah?
Part of it, definitely. But the average American who is not all the way aware of what's going on, you know, he feeds them false narratives. And, you know, illegal voting, which is going on, and it's just, you know, it's a compilation of everything. He's weaponized the system, and he's a master of it.
And he's doing well. He's doing, you're right. He's succeeding at it. Arnetta, why are not people picking up on that? I want to talk specifically, I just mentioned this Krasner out of Philly. We talked about the races in Virginia. What should people know? Because I get, as I look at what he's accomplished in Philly, the DA there, and I see what's going on in Virginia, you start to really realize there's a motive here. And is it unrest? Is it just they're anti just the rule of law or what?
It's really anti-America, Malcolm. If you look at what he has done in Europe and the countries that overthrew duly elected government officials, this is what he does. He goes into a country, and now he has turned it towards America, but he goes into these countries and pretty much destroys everything, overthrows the ruling government, and then invests, because bottom line is the dollar. Greed, ego, and the dollar motivates the power that he craves. And he will go in and, you know, convince people to privatize the utilities, and then he will buy them. He does this on an ongoing basis, but he also wants to be king. And anything that he can do, and trust me, I've researched it, he's got his fingers on every part of the Constitution and every freedom that we have. Mm-hmm. He is working against it, whether it's gun rights, freedom of speech, voting. Yeah. He owns or manipulates stocks and companies that control it, down to the organizing the caravans coming through Europe. How do these people from Africa get to the southern border? How did they get here? The same way the migrants got into Europe. The right. boats were hired or owned or rented mm-hmm. by the Soros group. But it's not just Soros. Soros is the recognized name, just like mm-hmm. a Kleenex is a tissue. He and the Democracy Fund, which is the founder of eBay, and there's several others, Norman Lear, they've partnered together now, which makes them even more dangerous. They want this country, every state in this country, to be blue. Look at the midterms with the voter fraud. They went after every border state. Yeah. Every coast.
Well, there's an end game here, clearly. There's an end game of what they're looking for. Let me tell folks a little more about George Soros. He was born in Budapest in 1930. The man is 88 years old. This August here, he'll be 89. So this is an investor. He calls himself, as you hear, a philanthropist. That's in question, obviously. His net worth, last record of this, is $8 billion. And that's essentially because he donated the $32 billion. But sure, he created his own outreach mechanism, Open Society Foundations. That's where the $32 billion went. It was just an arm to be able to do all these things around the globe. So it's his money, essentially, and he's using it through this arm. He's been married three times. He's got five children. Some of the children, it's been known that they're picking up the reins of where he is. And obviously, they say the apple doesn't fall far from the tree, people, does it? Now, that seems to be pretty indignant of these kinds of things here. But he's very good at playing the long game on these sort of things, as a lot of these cats are, versus a lot of our political elite who don't do that well at all. He was involved in the Brexit thing. He continues to try to, he's trying to turn Brexit, reverse it, and trying to get the British, because he wants to see an open, he's a globalist. He would be the definition of a globalist. He's what you call a globalist. He sees a one world order. And just think about it, people. With a name like an Open Society Foundation, I mean, that should tell you. Open. I mean, you know, he's not hiding it. Now, I'm just, so for all of you who think he's hiding it, he's not hiding it. He believes that's his world that he's looking for, Open Society Foundation. And he's playing to that. And that's exactly what he's doing here. You know, Roseanne Barr put out a tweet, and she said, George Soros is a Nazi who turns in his fellow Jews to be murdered in German concentration camps and stole their wealth. And she says in the tweet, are you aware of that? Well, the Soros spokesman answered back and says, such false allegations are insulting to all victims of the Holocaust to call Jewish people. Now, as it was just said, Karen, I want to get your last thoughts on this here. He's been behind the Parkland school attempt and protest and gun control. He's behind the caravans coming up from Central America. He has supported the refugees in Europe. He's trying to do the Brexit thing. He's doing the local elections thing. I mean, this is a man on a mission. And what would you say is the ultimate goal of it? What's, as a globalist, it's pretty clear, Open Society Foundation. He's not hiding it, is he?
No, he's not hiding it at all. And he absolutely is on a major push forward to destroy the Western civilization, because he is going to make it into a world that he has decided what it should be. You really have to understand, and Arnetta was absolutely correct before, and so were you and your listener, that, and Roseanne Barr, that he absolutely has no regard for an individual human life. They do not care. They are on a mission, and their goal is to transform America, to create a society of drones who are only capable of working, hence the drugs, why they're trying to get it legalized, because people who are high and stoned and whatever are not going to fight them. And they can pick them up and say, here, vote here. And this is what's going on. I looked up on the 45 goals of communism, and 38 and 39 left me, this is what's going on today, is transfer some of the powers of arrest from the police to social agencies. Treat all behavioral problems as psychiatric disorders with no one but psychiatrists can understand or treat. So this is the push. Get these people out, claim that they are mentally incapacitated, and then there's no place for them except on the street in a homeless tent or living on the street in one of our cities. Their goal is to destroy, and they're not looking behind to see what's in the wake of their destruction.
Well, one of the things that he has done, he openly said that Trump and Trump supporters are the last barrier to globalism, to the New World Order. So what you see in Congress right now is totally controlled by this group of progressive globalists. This resist, this absolute trying to destroy Trump. He has said, spoke at the World Conference, he said that Trump is the enemy to the One World Order.
We've drawn out an interesting scenario here, friends, about world affairs when it comes to the name of George Soros. You now know a little bit more about him, what his influence is, what he's trying to accomplish around the world. And I think the best thing I can say to you is to be informed. You have to be informed. And so you have to look at things to see who's behind that. Remember, there's always an underlying motive to these things. And what our job is as voters and as God-loving free people is to understand those motives. Who's behind that? What are they looking for? It always comes back to, again, a radical corruption, greed, control, power. It always comes back to that, people. There is no other denominator except that. I want to get back to superpower status now and talk about where's America's position in the world when we talk about the position in of Iran that we just talked about, but China and then Russia. We've made a mockery out of this relationship. I think that plays into this in a very strategic way. I'd like to talk to you about that next year as Viewpoint rolls on.
The America Out Loud Talk Radio app is on Android or Apple. It's the perfect way to listen in to the new generation of talk shows and hosts who are ready to inform and inspire.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
Pat Boone here for the folks at Swiss America. Rock-solid foundations are vital in life, in business, and in finance because in the end, only what we've built on a firm foundation will withstand the storms of life. Today, the economic storms are raging and the foundations of everything are being tested. The world economy has never looked shakier. And gold, the world's oldest and most trusted form of money, is also grabbing headlines. Now is the time to put your future on a rock-solid foundation. Swiss America will help you create an indestructible asset today. Discover the timeless truth about gold and silver by calling Swiss America or visiting online at SwissAmerica.com.
800-978-3901. Once again, that's 800-978-3901.
All right, as we return back here, I'd like you to welcome back on again. Baruch Plettner is here and Ilana Friedman. You heard their analysis up front again about the disaster, this crisis that's brewing in the Middle East, in Iran. Again, and this Middle East is a hot spot for all these kinds of things that happen. But, you know, let's not lose sight, friends, of the fact that often there's a tipping point, what I call the tipping point. And the tipping point always is, it's just that spark sometimes that's needed. We're actually in a very interesting place as we continue to beat each other up here at home. As we were talking about earlier, as you heard Baruch talking about earlier about the disconnect here in the United States. I've been saying to you right out there, there's a factor in all of this. It factors into world geopolitical affairs in a big way. And, you know, people, again, the world is connected more today than ever, ever before. So here's what I'm wondering. You mentioned the Iran's Revolutionary Guard, or whether there was a rogue element in that. That came up, Baruch, with you and Ilana earlier here. Interesting, but let's draw another scenario, please. I'd like you to opine on, and it's this. We all know and understand that the sanctions are having dire impact on Iran. Now, the people of Iran are suffering greatly, unfortunately, due to this government. It always comes back to we the people. And at what point is there that tipping point within a nation? And we've been speculating and talking about it in past months about the people and the sanctions. But here's the thing. If you're the leadership in Iran, and you are, and you feel like you're losing your grip on power to whatever degree that is, Baruch, and you feel like that that's happening, okay? And, but it, more than that, money is tighter than hell and you can't even pay. I mean, their money is going to pay the International Revolutionary Guard, the Iran's guard, because they don't have money to really even do a lot of the other things they need to do. And that's where sanctions have been a very big impact. At that point, you almost want to stir the pot, because if you're losing your grip on leadership, and now you know you've got China. Now, interestingly enough, China has, they've been meeting. Let me just tell you, last month, one other point here, Brooke, Ilana, that last month there was a meeting in Beijing between the Chinese leadership and Zarif was there, the foreign minister. And it was said, the Chinese state counselor came out and told Zarif that given the important and rapidly evolving situation, that the two needed to strengthen communication and coordination. Now, this was a month ago, by the way, okay? Now, that tells me something as well. I am starting to really get a sense that potentially, Brooke, I think Iran may be lashing out because they're losing their grip and they want to pull China into this. And what I said earlier in the program, sometimes that's all you need is a tipping point, is it not, sir?
Yeah, exactly. And you know, you can look at it from, you know, from, I like to do this kind of mental trick and look at things not as they are now, but kind of take them to their limit. And if you look at, you know, as Ilana mentioned previously, the Strait of Hormuz has something like 30% of the world seaborne oil traffic, and there's just no possibility of that straits being closed or even choked off or you know, impaired in any way. So one thing we can be certain of, and that is the Strait of Hormuz will remain open. The question is, who will guarantee it? Who will guarantee the safety of navigation through the Hormuz Straits? And I can tell you one thing: whoever does that is the superpower. So if America does it, if America guarantees that safety of navigation through the straits, then America is still the reigning superpower. But if America doesn't do it, if America kind of draws back and allows China to do it, then China is the new superpower. And that's what we're going to see in the next very near future, because America will do it via its force of arms, its navy, and so on. China will do it differently. China will do it through Iran. It will tell Iran, you know what? We will guarantee that you can feed your people, that your regime can survive as long as you allow traffic, you know, navigation through the Hormuz Straits. And the question is, what will happen? Will it be still the American century, or will it now be the Chinese century?
Well, that's a hell of a point to bring up here, Ilana, that Baruch positions out there, because that would mean, and that would also be unusual for a Trump to lay down his arms, as what he's saying, to kind of in some way sort of surrender. He doesn't like to intervene in things. We know he's sort of pulled back from some of those world affairs. What do you think about that situation?
Well, you know, China does really want to be the superpower, and their whole political push has been to overtake the United States as the world leader, and they say they'll do it within the next 5 years. I think we need to remember that it's not just that simple, because we also have to deal with Russia, and we have to remember that Iran has had a very close relationship with North Korea. They did a serious nuclear development and deployment development with North Korea until their mountain collapsed. And we're looking at a situation with a lot of moving parts. So I think we want to be careful not to oversimplify it. So having said that, it seems very clear from everything that I'm getting from my sources that Trump is taking a low-key but very strong position in that part of the world. He's already moved two battle groups from the Fifth Fleet, from the Mediterranean Fleet to the Fifth Fleet in the Gulf of Oman. And this is a statement that he's making to Iran, which is essentially very low-key, but it says, don't mess with us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's even talk about them pulling in tens of thousands of more troops, Ilana. So, Ilana, you don't see Trump backing down, then, is what you're saying?
I do not.
Yeah.
I do not think he'll back down. But what Baruch is suggesting is that what the Chinese will do is not by show of force, but by a kind of secret diplomacy with Iran. And that is also possible, in which case we now have the Americans squared off with the Chinese.
Yeah, no, and I agree with what he says, Ilana. I think China would do that. You agree with that as well. They would do that with,
absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. That would be the way they would control those straits, without a doubt. And different than the way America would do it. My guess is, and that's really the question now, is controlling the straits there, or the confrontation. So that leads us to this point now, Brooke. So what happens next? Let's talk about what happens next with Iran. So we're at this pivotal point now, this tipping point. Someone's either going to keep pushing or they're going to back off. Do you see Iran? Do you see them pushing at this point?
Well, I think that they would like to. The question is, can they? Because Trump does have another card to play, and I've written about this on Creative Destruction Media and my website, Zionism. He has another card to play, which is to kind of avoid, you know, play. They say, you know, Iran is trying this asymmetric warfare. They're trying to do this little sneaky, little murky by proxy stuff and so on. And America usually responds with its, you know, cruise missiles and all these million-dollar guided munitions and so on. But there's another way. Trump can also encourage some internal resistance groups. He can encourage some elements in the area, possibly Israel, secretly though, as well as Gulf nations, Saudi Arabia, others. And they can kind of play in that same playing field that Iran is playing in, this kind of secret, murky playing field, at least to try to deter Iran for a while until America gets its own act together. That's another possibility, and I think it would be a very smart thing for Trump to do, and I think he's trying to do that. So Iran, they have all the will in the world. Do they have, though, the means? That remains to be seen.
God, that is well said. They have all the will in the world, Ilana. That is pretty clear, huh? They do. They have all the will in the world. And do they have the means, though? I think a lot of their means has got to be through China, because let's face it, the other piece of this we haven't really touched on is Israel. Israel is not going to step by. They're not going to stand down as China takes control of the Straits and with Iran, do you think?
I'm not so sure, because they're already talking about having China own part of the port of Haifa. And that's a big deal. I don't know why they're even considering it, because that's very,
tell us
very
about
dangerous.
That, Ilana. Tell us about that, please.
Well, I there isn't that much to tell. Perhaps Baruch knows more than I do, but I've been following it sort of peripherally, and just the idea. China tried to do that with us too, and they wanted to purchase some of our ports, and I believe they were successful in some cases. And this is a very dangerous thing, because China does not play fair. And we know it. We know they cheat, and we know they steal. You know, they have a driving force within them that says we must rule the world. I mean, they really want to be the superpower of the world. And this is something that we see in Africa. We see it in South America, where they come in, they take over. You know, very important industries. They destroy the environment, and then when they've had enough, they move on, or they stay and get bigger. And this is something we need to be very, very mindful of, because it's an insidious movement on the part of China to take over the world, and they're being fairly successful at it, even though their economy is suffering a lot. They are still moving forward, just like Iran, whose economy is suffering very badly, but they are managing to keep all these balls in the air. And you have to remember that their main goal is to become a nuclear power.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and China,
well said.
North Korea certainly helped them with that. They did a tremendous amount of development there and then brought it all back to Iran. So, you know, we're seeing some of the fruits of our inattention.
What, another last thought, Brooke, I want to pause. I want to give to you a moment here, please. I want you to think about here. I want to talk to real briefly about Russia with you. I've said for some time that we need to strategically partner with Russia for a lot of reasons. And I have felt that for some time now. But we've made a mockery out of our relationship with Russia. We've used it as internal politics, if you will, Brooke. Now, this is just me speaking here now. But I see us as having used Russia as an internal punching bag as the political parties here continue to seek their dominance here. But Russia is, I think, key to this. If we had a relationship with Russia, we would be in a hell of a lot better spot. Can you speak to that, please?
Oh, I mean, there's no question. You know, first of all, I totally agree with Ilana's assessment of China as a very dangerous and disingenuous player from every possible perspective, as she mentioned. And that makes it, and what the U.S. has been doing, well, I mean, let's clearly say it. What the Democrats in America have been doing is pushing Russia into the arms of China, and you know they've been blocking every attempt by the Trump administration to offer China a way to the West and pushing it to the East. And what that does, and that's what's being so egregiously underreported, what it does is it opens the enormous natural resources, and not just oil. You're talking about timber, lumber. You're talking about rare earths. You're talking about elements. You're talking about fresh water, like Lake Baikal, which is a very important resource in the world today. And all of that is being sold by Russia to the Chinese for pennies on the dollar because they have no other choice, because you know the Democrats blocked them from any other course of action substantially. And this policy that is being, you know, for political reasons, for reasons of personal gain, being foisted on America, I think when all is said and done, it will be remembered as one of the most suicidal policies that have ever been undertaken by a large country like America. It's just pure insanity that's what they're doing. They're making China much more powerful because they're basically forcing Russia to sell itself to the Chinese.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a shame.
Yeah. Wow. What a powerful conversation here with, and big thank you to Baruch Plettner, Ilana Friedman. This is what I want you to take from this is, again, the internal politics that are happening here in America have a major impact around the world. And for those who do that as sport back here in the United States, there are consequences for this. We continue to point out this these challenges here at home and what has taken place with this the power greed and corrupt that is happening here. Remember, as I've continued to say to you, it happens on our homeland. We are the cause of the cancer here. We are the root cause of all of this. And we're the only ones that can really harm ourselves. No one else is going to really take us out to the cleaners, if you will. Just ourselves. We will do it to us ourselves. That's always the lesson here I need you to take from this. We can deal with just about anything else. And as you hear Baruch and Ilana speak about this, it should give you pause to understand where the tipping point is on all of this. So what a great program. On top of that, we learned a lot today about Soros and our superpower status, international fears, what's happening there. Thank you again, friends, for joining us here on Viewpoint. It's time to get involved and get loud.